Hello and welcome to the Be Your Own Healer Telesummit. I'm Jonathan Fitzgordon, your host and founder of Core Walking. I'm here today speaking with Elena Brower. Through her teaching, influenced by several traditions, including alignment-based Hatha and Kundalini Yoga, Elena offers yoga as a way to approach our world with realistic reverence and gratitude. Her classes are a masterful, candid blend of artful alignment and attention cues for your body, mind, and heart. Elena and I go way back, having both trained at Om Yoga Center in New York in the late 90s.
Yes, we did.
Elena, thank you so much for being here, Elena.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Jonathan. Good to hear your voice.
All right, let's get right to it. So what does the phrase, be your own healer, mean to you?
I truly have found I'm 43 years old now, and I truly have found in the past 20 years or so of getting into this world of healing that if I can't take care of myself, I have absolutely no right to try and take care of another human being. If I can't trust myself, I have no right to ask another human being to trust me. And everything comes together when I am in charge of my own healing, when I am designing my own healing, designing my own wellness. And that seems to be the key for creating a modicum of success in the world of healing as profession.
And how has, what led you there? How has your own personal history informed your current approach to working with people?
Well, you were there at the very beginning. I met Cindy when I was playing hooky from my textile design job at Crunch back in like 1997. And she invited me to that first training where we met, you and I. And I thought it was awesome. I found that I was good at talking to my peers. I wasn't great at the beginning. I had a lot of learning to do in terms of being fearless, letting people like see me and see them and then instruct to what I was seeing rather than instruct from my little mind. I knew a lot intellectually, but I had a long way to go in the past, 17, 18 years towards being able to look at people, intuit what was needed in terms of not only instruction, but also, as we're talking about today, their healing. And I had to really practice seeing. It was more, if we were going to theme up this talk for my part in your telesummit, it would be sort of like the art of seeing.
It's interesting. So I've been teaching about 15 years, and when I work with new teachers or teachers in training, I always share with them that I really did not like teaching when I first started. I felt so uncomfortable and so, so much about seeing. So much of it for me was that people would say, well, my wrist hurts. What do I do? And I had to say, well, I don't really know, or modify, which was like the catchword of the moment, And that was such a hard experience for me to grow into being a teacher that could actually see people and help people and not be just sort of basically an insecure little boy who was dove into this thing he loved but was still kind of terrified about it.
Yep. And, it makes me think of there is a book called Sat Nam Rasayan that was influencing me even before I took what turned out to be a part of a Kundalini teacher training. I couldn't finish for reasons I'll discuss later on in the talk. And it's a book that centers around this healing practice that was based in Kundalini Yoga by Gurudev Singh, Gurudevsingh. And Sat Nam Rasayan is basically the practice of seeing your resistances, feeling your resistances to whomever it is you're working with. And upon seeing and feeling the resistances, there is, in the space, a healing that happens because you've seen it clearly enough the assumption is to sort of dissolve it. And I found that to be really, really helpful as a guidepost for everything I've done since reading that book, because once I am able to catch myself being blocked by something, immediately my mind goes to this book and I think, okay, what am I resisting? What is my little mind appalled by? you know, and I'm saying little mind, I've said it a couple of times, I don't really think that mind is a problem. I know how noble our brains are and how incredible they are at finding ways to solve issues and create change, create comfort. But what I'm referring more to is all the judgments and the littleness that we impose on our hearts often. So like that. But the Satnam Rasayan practices are really good because what you're doing is by seeing your resistances, you're creating what he calls a sacred space, a sensitive space first, and then ultimately a sacred space for healing to occur, not just from the person you're working on, but also for yourself as healer, which is important, as we all know, because I'm sure this has come up a million times in your talks. We do not know how to take care of ourselves at all, and the wounded warriors turn out to be the best healers for other people, but they can't take care of themselves.
It's been very interesting to hear different people, and I'll say it's probably been split about 50-50 of people who very interestingly knew from birth or from childhood this is what they wanted to do. They wanted to help people. This was their plan. And then the other half who had a moment or an injury or an illness or caring for someone that led them down the healing path. And I think that is a really interesting process of what leads us here. So what did you want to be when you grew up?
I always wanted to be a veterinarian.
You're not the only one.
No way. Who else? Do you remember?
What's that?
Do you remember who else wanted to be a vet of the group?
I think it might have been Katie Bowman.
Oh, the cutest thing ever. Seriously, that was what I wanted to be for a very long time. And then I finally figured out that actually what I'd love to be is a clothing designer. That was really what I thought I wanted for my life, and I did it for about 7 years, 8 years, until I was standing alone in my apartment in Turin, Italy, one day. It was a Sunday. I'll never forget the moment. And I was listening to all the families and the sounds and the smells, and I was just like, you know what? I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time. I need to go. I need to be a part of some sort of help situation. I'm not helping anybody. I'm just going season after season, you know, making money for a company that I don't necessarily want to be making money for. And I just felt completely at odds with myself. And it was right at that moment that I said, okay, you know what, I'm out. I'm leaving. And it was then that I went back home, got the freelance job from which I was playing hooky when I met Cindy Lee.
That's true. So you had that moment actually before you'd started doing yoga.
Yeah, what I ended up doing actually, I didn't tell the whole story because I don't know how long you want me to keep going on. But I didn't want to tell the whole story because what I ended up leaving for was to go to school to learn how to teach art to kids. And I went to the new school for a year and got trained to teach art to kids. I did a semester at VCS, at Village Community School, and then I did a semester at City and Country. Awesome. I just had the greatest time. And what I ended up learning was that I'm great at teaching kids. I am even better at teaching my peers about their bodies. That's what I learned from Cindy. I was just that felt really good to me, as scary as it fucking was, pardon my French. That's what felt really good to me, and that's what ended up ultimately winning as my choice of, you know, how to spend my time professionally.
And what do you consider yourself? Like, do you need to identify as something? But if you did, are you a teacher, a healer, a guide?
I'll call myself a teacher if I have to put down a profession on a thing, you know, on a questionnaire.
Right,
like,
right.
For a passport or whatever, license. But typically, yeah, yoga teacher, coach is something I'm super proud of that I do that I love. I work for the Handel Group. I've been very successfully coached by them for a number of years now, and they have an incredibly clear and present method for how to get us into our hearts and out of our judgments of ourselves and other people. And I have found that to be just one of the most ridiculously helpful lines of work my life.
Do you want to?
Do it.
Well, it's interesting because I think when people, most people think coach, they don't think healing. Do you want to speak to the idea of coaching as healing, as opposed to coaching being a business thing?
Oh, for sure. So, what I mostly am good at, and what I found is most rewarding for me, is coaching families, lovers, couples, parents on how to be proud of themselves within the context of these very, very intimate familial and household relationships. So couples, I will walk them through the process of what we call getting resolved, where, you know, people don't know how to talk to each other. We don't know how to fight. We don't know how to argue. We don't know how to we don't know how to treat each other. And so having gone through the frustration of that for so many years and lost two really amazing relationships, but both of them ended up being truly for the best and are best friends for life and family for life, what I can say is that most of us really don't have the tools for how to, as we said before, how to see other people's experience and how to listen to another person, especially when there's been a lot of, you know, frankly, I'm just going to curse because it's the only word I'm thinking of right now, when there's been a lot of shit in the space, a lot of strife in the space. We don't know how to listen to each other. And so what, this is just one of the many things that I've learned from practicing and teaching this method, is how do we get resolved with somebody where we actually set up time and space to listen to them and truly hear them, and truly make sure that they have felt heard, and then offer our side of the story. Because most of the time, what's being presented as, this is my experience, for example, it's my experience that, I don't know, it feels like you're not present for me when we are eating dinner. I don't know, let's say. This is an example. And the other person really gets to hear that and be like, oh, so... instead of immediately launching into, no, I'm present for you and we're eating dinner. What the fuck are you talking about? Instead, it's, oh, so let me just see if I get this right. I get that you feel like I'm not present for you when we're eating dinner and whatever else you said. Do you feel like you've been heard? You know what? Yes, I do. Or, you know what? No, I don't. I feel like there's one other thing that I forgot to say. And then suddenly you're in a dialogue that actually is what you feel, it's what you're experiencing, and the other person is not taking it as, you idiot, you're wrong for making me feel this way. The other person is taking it as, ah, that was your experience. It was mine. Because ultimately the other person gets to talk too. And then you have a space where two people are listening respectfully, loving one another, helping one another be heard, helping one another listen well. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful space. And then that changes the flavor of the relationship, and that changes the flavor of the space that they share. And suddenly, if there are kids involved, the kids start to learn how to listen well, and the kids start to learn how to, quote-unquote, argue sweetly, kindly, respectfully. You know, and we have too many households now where, guess what? There's no respect left. And it's understandable because none's been cultivated. And this coaching method that I teach and learn, and yes, there's business aspects, there's a whole corporate division with which I have nothing to do at this moment, but I imagine that I'm going to learn how to do that too at some point. It really is about getting us into our hearts, getting us aware of another person's experience in a very beautiful and nourishing way, and sharing space with other people in a way that actually helps everybody rather than hinders everybody. And that, you know, that's for the world. I want to amplify the love through that kind of work. I'm not interested in anything but that.
That's great. You know, I marriage is a trip, right? So I like to think I taught my wife how to argue, and she taught me how to listen.
I'm with that. I believe that 100%.
You know, in the context of that kind of work, I feel like, you know, one of the things I do, I'm selling change in a lot of ways, or I'm telling people they don't have to settle for where they're at. that change is available. And sometimes I feel like I'm doing a lot of cheerleading, you know, believing in them when they don't necessarily. How much cheerleading is involved with what you do?
Not much. I mean, you know, when people are doing great, I absolutely get out the pom-poms and we'll, you know, cheerlead like crazy. But what I'm more interested in is getting them to see where they're bullshitting themselves and other people, which we all do with great frequency and facility. And so, you know, for me, to get everybody like, you know what, I'm so sorry, but what I'm hearing when you say that is not exactly the truth, I don't think. What do you think? And then suddenly it comes out that actually, you know what, you're right, this is totally me covering up. I'll give you a good example that comes up a lot is when you feel bad. Okay, so say you said to yourself that you were not going to eat anything past 9 o'clock at night because you really want to lose the extra 4 pounds that you've got on, and then suddenly, you know what, you fucking ate. You went into the fridge and you ate a bunch of stuff actually at 9:30, and you feel bad about it. And because you feel bad about it, that makes you a good person. So when I hear, right? And when I hear somebody say, hey, you know, I did that, but I felt bad about it. So, you know, I won't do it the same way next time. And I get to look at them and be like, you know what? With all due respect, my hands folded in front of my heart, that's bullshit. I don't care if you feel bad about it. What I'm going to know is, do you want to lose the weight or not? Do you want to have a respectful, great relationship with your lover or not? What do you want? Because if you want it, you doing the wrong thing and then feeling bad is not going to get you any closer to what you want. It's matter of fact, it's moving you much farther away from that. And I can't stand by and watch that. That means you're not coachable. Mm-hmm. And why, you know, why should either one of us be spending our time on that when what I really need you to do is say, you know what? I did it. And tomorrow, I'm not going to do that. And then show up tomorrow and be like, I went to sleep at 9:15, didn't touch the fridge. Guess what? I'm a pound lighter today. Or whatever the thing is. You know,
right.
I wasn't mean to my partner. I was great. Whatever it is. And then you start to, you know, in this method, it's all about getting proud of who you're being so that you can move forward with your dream. We don't have dreams, and so this method calls on us to actually create for each of the 18 areas of our lives an actual dream. You know, for my career, when I first started with them, it was like I am helping thousands of people feel better in their families. And then slowly my coaches were like, sorry, if this is really your dream, we want to see millions. Okay, I'm helping millions of people feel better in their families. And every day, if I'm mean to my partner or if I'm awful to my kid, this is not aligned with my dream. Okay? And in the first place, to have a dream is kind of the magic of all of it because, you know, if you ask 50% of the people, they don't have a dream. They're not even thinking about having a dream. They're thinking about what they're going to eat for dinner. What's the big grand dream for your life? What's the big grand dream for your favorite love story? Most people have not written that down. And when you start to write it down, then you have a vision. Then you have a purpose. By dream, by the way, I mean vision. And then you have a purpose. And then suddenly it's like, wow, for each of these 18 areas of my life, romance, my relationship to time, all you late people who don't have a bedtime, who need a bedtime, you need a bedtime. Otherwise, you're staying up till 2 a.m. surfing the freaking web and not actually taking care of your body. My relationship to money. My relationship to my partner, my relationship to my parents, my family, in the bigger picture, all of this needs to be designed, and we don't do that. So that's what made me fall in love with this methodology as a healing tool. It's not just about money, but it definitely helped me get more comfortable with every aspect of my life, including that, like, that area of money and my profession and how I'm going to monetize what I do in a way that feels in integrity, that takes care of people, takes care of me, provides for my family, you know, and also just feels amazing.
There are a number of entrepreneurs who were part of this. One was a coach who works with women And that a lot of that dialogue was about the healing nature of entrepreneurial work, you know, about and that's an empowerment thing that I think is just so, that can be so powerful for people.
And nobody realizes, well, this is something that I talk about a lot, so for those of you who listen to me talk on other interviews, I want to apologize first for the redundancy of this, but it's important to bring it up in this context. We are all still sort of licking the wounds of World War II. Our parents were raised by people who went through that time. So being kids of people who went through that time, they're still embedded in their DNA and in their whole psyche, a feeling of lack, poverty, lack of freedom, lack of money, lack of time, lack of resources even. And, you know, if you think back to a lot of us who are our age in our 40s and even a little bit younger maybe, if you think back, we were forced to eat everything on our plate for the most part because there were, who knew when the next bit of food was coming? That was all from the war. There was no money. You couldn't, I mean, at that time, you couldn't even use plastics. You couldn't wear hosiery in like the late, mid-40s, early 40s because it was all the plastics and the synthetics were being used for ammunition. There's all these weird little tiny things that we don't really realize play out now in our experience in a pretty significant way. And for us to think about how we can earn money in integrity, create opportunity, not just for ourselves, but for other people around the healing space, help people learn how to meditate, help people learn how to practice yoga, help people find their bodies again. That spirit of entrepreneurship within the context of this healing realm is actually not only healing all the bodies, but healing the misconception around what is possible financially and spiritually for all of us as a society. And I think that is just the most exciting.
That's a great opportunity, that's for sure.
Yep. I mean, and if it's done well, like both of us are trying to do, like we really do get to help people. We really do get those letters and those emails all the time. It's like, wow, thank you. You just changed my family dynamic forever. My kid looked at me and said X, Y, Z, and it blew my mind.
My brother is my brother is my partner in my business, and mm-hmm. he is not a body person. And he came with me to a workshop yesterday, and we were talking about how we couldn't be more different in a lot of ways. And he can't believe, yes. you know, he gets these, we get emails from people who, you know, who say, wow, I changed the way I walk, and my life has changed. And he just, it's not that I don't love it. I find it incredibly gratifying, and it blows my mind every time it happens. But to see his perspective on it is incredibly, incredibly sweet. It's,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things, and it's a dynamic that comes up in the pain work and the trauma work I do with people is very often the people who, from their suffering comes their healing, comes their transition into working with people who are looking for help. You know, it's such a beautiful process.
Mm-hmm. It is the most beautiful. Most beautiful. I feel really fortunate to, you know, there are a few of us that really stuck with it and went for it from our, you know, from our graduating class there at OHM. And I feel very, very proud to know you and be a part of that because I think that we did a great thing in staying with it and really going for it.
Yeah, it's very sweet. It's it's not that all the teachers that are still around came from that time, but there really are a lot of teachers that you know, started in the late 90s and stuck around, which is very sweet to see.
Well, I think, you know, the whole idea of the 10 years to being, you know, sort of a quote-unquote expert, I don't want to be presumptuous and say that I'm an expert necessarily, but, you know, I feel like I know a few things finally, And I feel like I knew when I was 30 that when I was 40, I would have a lot more to offer the world. And I definitely feel like I do, and I feel confident in that. But most of it is less to do with, you know, how much I've known and how much I've read and studied, and far more to do with my life experience and, you know, the trials and tribulations and loves lost and all of that, you know, the injuries falling down a mountain that have created in me the desire to help. And I think that's, you know, with 20 years down the road, whatever stage you're at, if you're listening to this, 10, 20 years down the road, is going to be a very neat and sweet confirmation, if you do stay with this work, that you should and could be here because you wanted to and you did. Stay with it. Let all of your experiences teach you.
Does healing have to be painful?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I definitely, you know, I definitely in a lot of my work have resonated and connected with a number of people through that experience of like, wow, that was really painful. Here was my experience of it. And, you know, hundreds, thousands of people are just like, wow, I totally get that. That's exactly how it happened for me, or it happened something like that for me. But on the other side, there are tons of victories and sweetnesses that have come without sort of undue pain, that were just as potent and just as important, just as key to my growth and to what I have to offer to the world and to my students. You know, so I don't think it has to come with pain, but I definitely feel like a lot of mine did, and a lot of the way in which I resonate with people has to do with coming out the other side of some deep pain and feeling the light after that.
Yeah, one of the things that I really love about the work I do is guiding people towards uncovering what the root of their problem is, and you know, and what I do with walking in pain, it can be mysterious, and from incidents and injuries and illnesses, even from when they were children, and so it's a lot of detective work and trying to help people uncover stuff. How much detective work would you say is involved in what you do?
I think it goes back to what we were just talking about in terms of the time spent and the number of years that we do the work that we do, because now I'm only coaching 4 years. I don't have to do much detective work to hear somebody say one thing, you know, and then ask them, hey, there was a good example today on one of my calls. Oh, a gal whose dad, this is kind of profound, a gal whose father is as she said it, it seems like he's having dementia. And she's convinced that she's going to have the same thing. And so that fear of hers is driving much of how she operates today, which, you know, is disturbing. And as her coach and somebody who's trying to help her, my first question is, well, can I just speak frankly? Yes. my guess is that your father might be in a situation where at some point in his early life, he may have been pretty deeply abused in some way. And this is something that I learned from my coach. I'm not just making this up. And very often when people who have endured, you know, serious trauma, I have just, I'm on my knees thinking about this and with the great, great respect. People who've endured serious trauma and then had to hide it are having spent thousands of hours shoving this memory, this experience, down deep, 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 deep into the well of their psyche, okay? Having spent all that time shoving this down and putting it down and forgetting and forgetting and forgetting and forgetting and forgetting and forgetting and keeping having to forget, by the time 20 years goes by or 30 years goes by, that part of the brain that they had to see was remembering and then make it forget, by the time that number of years goes by, you have a part of the brain where the coalition of nerves has been numbed. And then you have what looks like things like dementia. And then you have a whole family surrounding that person who has this experience, who thinks that it's some sort of genetic hereditary thing, when really it's just countless hours of hiding what was shameful that creates a certain neural pathway that is the farthest thing from healing, and that in fact is actually creating a terrifying truth neurologically. I just think this is the most fascinating thing ever. And, you know, now when I look at families where dementia is a situation, my first detective question is something like, hey, could this be possibly true? Could this person have been hiding something for so long that maybe this part of their brain actually just is deeply suffering, and now we have this situation on our hands? You know, 9 times out of 10, the answer is yes. This dad found out, you know, within the past 10 years that actually, indeed, he had endured something awful as a child and now is so ashamed of it. He came to it and admitted to it as an adult, but is so ashamed of it now that he can't even, like, see straight. And it's awful for him. You know, so that sort of detective work is the kind of stuff that I'm mostly doing, where I'm sort of intuiting, okay, is it maybe something like this? Is it maybe something like this? And ultimately, it's some of my favorite work, because we really do get to solve things. We really do get to figure stuff out, and I find that to be a great privilege.
This is slightly off topic, but sort of similar. I was I mentioned that my brother went with me to this workshop yesterday, and I was talking to him about how many people lead double lives. And how so many people lead double lives, there seems to be something in our DNA to lead us towards leading double lives. And I was talking, my wife is, I love my wife so much because she's an enabler. She just lets me do anything I want. a really great thing, you know, so that I don't need to lead a double life. I can just do whatever I want.
Right.
But we were just talking about the amount of people who, that secrecy or deception or deceit from their loved ones, from their closest, the people closest to them in their lives, that there's something in them that needs, they need something separate or alone or, you know, a secret of some sort. It's really a trip.
It was one of the things that struck me first about the efficacy of the coaching method that I teach now in practice, which is that the secrets that we hold are not ours. We don't have them. They have us.
No, that's great.
And
yeah, absolutely.
That was, you know, I finally and slowly let go of all of my vices. I was totally addicted to marijuana. I never had an alcohol problem, but I was totally addicted to marijuana. I was addicted to cigarettes. I was addicted to lying about weird little things, which most of us happen to be, and we don't even realize it. Like if somebody says, hey, have you seen that article or whatever? And we'll just say, oh, yeah, yeah, it's great. we don't even, why? Why do we even need to do that? None of that was pointed out to me until I started working in this method and realizing that how ridiculous and futile that is. And so slowly I let go of all of these addictions and realized at the end of it that most of that stuff was about me having my own private experience that nobody else knew about. And that's
right,
where
right.
I felt most powerful. That's where I felt like I had my life, my fucking life, not your life. And this goes back to a simple childhood rebellion. It's the dumbest thing. It's so simple. And basically, when I was small, my family was really going through a lot of hard times. And I created like this fairy tale hidden world. I would close my door because I couldn't come out because there were other things going on that I wasn't allowed to be a part of, which is now understandable to me as an adult, 100%. But what I did was I created this whole little separate world. And then get to be an adult. And what does that separate world look like? Oh, yeah, little drugs, you know, cigarettes, whatever I could find that would be just mine and nobody else would know about it and just elicit enough that I felt like I was getting away with something. How hilarious. And I don't have a secret anymore. And I feel so much better. I sleep better. I wake up better. I feel like I have energy. My home space feels amazing. It's a totally different life without secrets. And I had no idea that it was possible until figuring out that actually I don't have any secrets. They have me.
That's a great phrase. You know, and I find it's a yoga teacher thing, you know, where and it's not to say I'm great or anything, but one of my things has always been, like, what you see is what you get, that I'm really trying to present myself as a teacher with vulnerabilities. You know, there are things I can do, there are things I can't do, and that's a really difficult thing, I think, for a lot of yoga teachers, the idea of that they don't need to have a secret. They can be who they are instead of trying to present something that is, you know, that knows something more than everyone else.
Yep. And, you know, I was definitely a victim, made myself a victim of that belief for a long time. I can't even say I was a victim of anything, because what I've now come to learn through this method is that we definitely choose. We've chosen everything. That's on some soul level, soul has chosen everything that we've gone through, as awful and really horrific as some of it was. My soul chose it so that I could really be clear with myself and learn how not to lie, you know, learn how to be a great, honest, clear human who could possibly have something to offer someone else on this planet. And I went for a lot of years thinking that I had to know everything, and it really was the moment that I started saying, hey, I have no idea what the answer to that question is, or I actually can't do this pose, but I'm going to present it to you in bits and parts so that we can all explore what it would feel like to open ourselves up in this way. That's when my professional life started to actually bear fruit. And I mean this 1,000% factually, financially. When I started copping to the fact that I don't know everything, I'm not perfect, I am completely fallible and ridiculously so at times, that's when I actually started having a real impact and a career and a way to, you know, actually do this work full time.
That's great. Do you take on the suffering of your clients in your work? Or how do you protect yourself from not?
I definitely used to. I definitely, you know, before I was trained, I had no idea what I was doing. So I would just, you know, feel like I would take it into my body and transform it and all this crazy shit. And it's just like, actually, you know what, after being trained by people who really know energy, now I know that I don't have to take anything in. All I'm doing, I trained with Pamela Miles, Reiki Levels 1 and 2, some other folks that are off the radar, Akashic Record readers, and, you know, folks like that nobody would know. But it's much more about just creating an open space, sort of like Satnam Rasayan, creating an open space so that what needs to enter can, because it's all already available within this fair and wonderful universe of ours. It has nothing to do with me draining my own personal resources and everything to do with me just opening my heart space so that whatever needs to be present or released can be so. Does that make sense?
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you find it easier to help others than yourself, or at this point are you pretty good at taking care of yourself as well?
I'm just now getting good at taking care of myself, really. Like, I still falter, but now I know how to talk about it. So before it becomes like some ridiculous, stupid, spiraling rabbit hole, I can actually just say to the people closest to me, I am sensing my hormones. I am sensing insecurity. I am having this moment of dread. So instead of becoming a week of, you know what, fuck it all, I'm just going to smoke weed and forget about everybody and not do anything and get all subbed for my class, just run away, which I've done from time to time, Now it's like, I'm just going to talk about it. I'm going to ask for help. I'm going to transmute it. It's going to be great. And then I will teach about it. And it will be even better because I can watch other people be helped by this ridiculousness that I went through. And then it feels great. You know what I mean? Then it feels like not all for naught, but in fact all for something really great to happen. So I'm finally getting kind of good at it.
And it serves others, right? It's a cliche, but it's really true.
I feel good about that. I feel good that, like, if I have, trying not to say like, my son is in the middle of a like brigade. removing the like from the house, I feel as though it is a purpose. A really, really beautiful purpose that I have to help people just be honest about what's going on in their lives, whether it's shame or blame or hardship or insecurity, whatever it is, because these are all, yes, totally first world problems, but they are in fact happening. And it's a beautiful thing to serve people like that, you know, to help them get clear in their minds so they can go home, be kind to their kids, be kind to their families, be kind to their spouse. You know, that's a great honor for me. I really appreciate the opportunity to do that.
What do you expect from your clients and students? So, like, how attached are you to their success?
Not really at all, you know. I think I was more so probably 5-6 years ago. And when I first started coaching, I definitely was. But I see how my coaches are with me. And they're attached to my success only insofar as it will either A, help further their mission, because I am a total evangelist for what they're doing. And if I'm successful, it brings more success to all of us in terms of, you know, more understanding about the efficacy of the method, more clients, more healing. But I don't feel that they are so attached to my success in terms of, like, how it would make them feel better. It's more about how do we help the world feel better. So when it comes to a client who has kids, I'm interested in their kids. When it comes to a client who, you know, is having, I don't know, some kind of affair or something like that, I'm interested in the children who are being impacted, the other spouse is being impacted. I want to make sure that people are not being terribly hurt by the information that I have. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm interested in. I don't, you know. To me, that's the goal of it, is where we can really help people have a better life day to day. Simple ways. Rather than, you know, how perfectly it reflects on me that I did a great job as a coach. You know, it dawns on me, but it's not really the reason why I do that work.
And it seems like one of the themes for you that you're sharing with people in terms of if they're practitioners is be nice to yourself and be patient, that it's going to take 10 years. So let the first 5 go by before you get too judgmental about how well you're doing, which is a very hard thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, I see it all the time. Everybody's like, well, aren't I supposed to feel better by now? You know, 3 months in. And it's like, no, actually, you might, it might happen, but the way you can feel better is not putting your hand in the fridge after 9 o'clock. Simple stuff.
Simple stuff.
It starts with simple stuff. I had to realize that I could stop smoking before I could, you know, design a relationship that I really want to be having and not just be reacting to the relationship that I was having. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think a lot of us are going through. You know, we've been, those of us who were married or in long-term relationships, and we think, you know what, this is the one. Something's obviously wrong with me or them, the other person. So we'll just, you know, tolerate it and fix it, tolerate it and fix it, tolerate it and fix it. And it's like, you know, there's an extent of learning to that, and I did that for a long time. But then there's also the moment where you can be like, you know what, I where you can say, you know what, I have this opportunity to take what I've learned here, not throwing everything away, but I'm actually going to choose to design this. And if this relationship does not fit into this vision, this dream, this design, it's okay. I'm going to find it in another way.
So that's an interesting – oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. That's an interesting
This relates to, I guess, both clients and partners and spouses, but, like, you know, there's a fine line between enabling and guiding. And what if people won't do the work, or clients or partners won't do the work, and how much of it is your responsibility to motivate them, and how do we process through that?
I don't think we can motivate anybody. Huh. I think as partners, the only thing we can do, even as parents, the most of what we can do is do the work ourselves and really get into a place where it's obvious, without us talking about it necessarily, that we are doing the work and we are feeling the benefits and the rewards, if you will, of being assiduous and diligent with ourselves. That begins to be the example energetically that we share. I can't teach my kid not to lie and then have him watch me, you know, cut a line at the airport. You know what I mean? There's stuff that goes on all the time with messages that we give our kids that we don't even realize. He and I have had this conversation because he watched another parent do that. And it was like, okay, so that was lying, you know? Or even this, it was awful. I was going into Canada, and he had to watch me say that we were going on vacation when I was actually going to be teaching a seminar.
Right.
He was really sad. He was really sad about it. And I was like, ay, ay, ay. So here's how I have to explain this, that I'm completely guilty. Because if I did say that I was teaching, we would have been detained for 3 hours. Eventually we would have been let in, but we would have been detained. And here's what would have happened. We would have missed our car, which would have made me late to the class, and da-da-da. So next time what I'm going to do is make sure that all the proper avenues are in place so that I have a letter that I'm working and this is happening and it's legal and it's fine. But I can't teach my kid not to lie and then do that without a full explanation and a full discussion.
Right.
And that's the opportunity. We don't do that often. And I want to make sure that that's super clear. Like, all we can do is set an example for the people around us. We can't expect them to do the work. We can only do the work ourselves. And if you find after a couple of years, whatever, you can set yourself a little, you know, a time frame. If you're in a crazy relationship or if you're in a damaging situation, you know, I'm going to give this 3, 4, 5 months, perfect, amazing college try is what I'm going to do. And if I can't get it together in that time, boom, I call it. You know what I mean? Something
totally.
Like that where, and you really are going for it yourself rather than trying to convince other people that they should have to do whatever it is that you want them to do. And then you have some information. I don't think I'm explaining that super well, but I want to make sure that I try. It's about making sure that you do the work yourself. Don't worry so much about what other people do. Do the work yourself. And then other people will follow suit if you're really in it.
I love that. I think we're going to
yeah.
call that a day, because I was going to ask you for some advice for people on how to, what are their first steps to be your own healer, and that sounds exactly like what that is.
Yeah, don't try and preach to anybody, you know, especially in your family, in your household. Just do your work for yourself. You want to get better with your temper. You want to get better with your addiction. You want to get better with your body. Take one small step. Make one small promise to yourself. Keep the promise. And everybody around you will see you trusting yourself, and then that's going to teach them how to trust you. And then that's going to teach them, well, I quiz myself too, and how can I do that? And then they might even ask you a question. And then you don't rub it in their face. You explain how you did it. Well, it was one small thing. This is what I had to do. I did it. I feel better.
I love it. Thank you so much, Elena. It's been really great chatting with you, as always.
Yeah, always. And thank you for the work that you're doing.
Oh, my pleasure. For more information on Elena Brower, go to her website, www.elenabrower.com. And everyone have a great day. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.